From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, December 20th, 2011. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, in our final podcast of the year, we consider the events of the year that gave us pause because they were unexpected. We'll look at what made us go, huh? In 2011, after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. The free ArcGIS for Android application is now available from the Android market. Access, share, and deploy maps and GIS data on Android devices. For more information or to download the application, visit esri.com/android.
The first event of the year that really made me start scratching my head was when the rumors started to seep out that MapQuest was going to start a social network. And then when it finally launched on October 14th, and we learned it was called MQ Vibe, and we learned about it as a tool to sort of vote up or down events and venues in specific cities, I scratched my head even more and said, this sounds like a nutty idea. But one of our readers, responding to my statement, Jennifer, wrote and quoted the FAQ and said that she thought it really had potential, and here's why. Unlike traditional rating sites, you can express your love, or not, on a visit-by-visit basis to keep the local businesses honest. A negative vote is just like losing a point in a match rather than a bad review, which tends to be about a place as a whole forever, and where the goal of the game is to get the neighborhood favorites you love consistently ranked at the top in the top 10. And it goes on. I do not know why MapQuest did this. Well, I have a guess. I will guess that it had to do with MapQuest trying to reach a different demographic than its current users, but I really don't think this was the way to do it, and this just had me scratching my head.
Did you ever try it at all?
I did go visit the MQ Vibe in my little city here, and it just didn't make any sense. The categories didn't make sense. I mean, there's one like about beauty parlors and salons, and I guess people, you know, that's an important category for some people, but this seemed like we have other tools to rate these things and other communities that we would use, and MapQuest is making a real leap from a how do I get there from here to this whole community idea.
Absolutely. There's other things that are more popular, more embedded into people's psyche and mindshare than MapQuest's new social network. I never visited it. I never saw the need to. I remember hearing about it, but thought, well,
not even
there's
worth
other
the
things.
Right.
No, not even worth a visit. Yeah.
Well, and I think we both, sadly, are emblematic of the response, which was every news site, technology news site covered it, said, oh, it's launching. And then since then, there has been almost nothing, and when I checked on Twitter, there were exactly 3 tweets that mentioned MQ Vibe in the world in the month of December.
It's interesting that you say they're trying to reach a different demographic. It sounded like they tried to be more hyper-local than a demographic. If they were trying for a different demographic, maybe the business community, in particular the travel community, would be have been a better target. Since I think they are more ingrained with those folks who still use MapQuest as a navigation tool.
Well, that or the non-hyperlocal community, which MapQuest already has a relationship with because it still powers so many of those store locators and things like that.
Right.
Which
right,
the hyperlocal guys don't have. They certainly wouldn't be paying MapQuest piles of money for them like a Kmart might or something.
Yeah, it's surprising that even the big guys like a MapQuest still trying to compete with the Facebooks and Googles of the world. Got to take a different tact in my book.
At least I give them a lot of credit for trying something, but this one really was off the rails for me.
Yeah. My first surprise has more of a geospatial professional take on it. I had gone to the GeoIn conference this year and was surprised at the number of people there, and it surprised me because we're in a real slow growth economy. The budget discussions in Washington are heating up continue to heat up. There's not even a lull in the budget discussions. I see it here in our local paper in Huntsville, which is extremely dependent on the defense community, and yet that show was packed. And you could reason that there are a couple of different factors. One, which is there's still a lot of growth in the industry and there's a lot of potential, or there are too few dollars chasing too few opportunities, I guess is the other way to look at it. And speaking with Keith Mosbach of the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, USGIF, he was even surprised to see how many people were there. The number of vendors on the floor kept growing. And he really fully anticipated that next year there could be a pullback and that it may be more fully realized at that point. But this year, not so. And so it really made me say, that's surprising to me. And it kind of relates to the overall job market in geospatial. Maybe there's some potential there, giving people some hope that that's a market that has some growth left in it.
But the geo-in space really does ebb and flow based on the DOD dollars going into it. And until, like, around now, we're still not sure what the cuts are going to be. So I guess back earlier this year, there was still potential there would be piles of money. Now, if those cuts in fact happen, I would expect that next year's show would get smaller.
Well, I agree, and I expect that to happen. However, if we're going to look to an area where there's going to be job growth, I don't think there's going to be the decline in the intelligence community that maybe we see in other sectors. I think the other surprise in the overall job market was an article we published that indicated that the state and local market was also at least not shrinking. That
healthy.
Was at least fairly stable. Right, right. So I'm trying to find those areas, again, scratching my head, okay, which area in geospatial is going to see the decline because of the economy? And I don't know if it's materialized in any one sector at this point.
Or at least not yet. Now, let me just push you on this a little bit, because there are those who would argue that it was also surprising that there were 800 people at Phosphor G, which you also attended this year. Did that surprise you?
No, it didn't surprise me. The growth of that particular sector is, I think, well established. There continues to be lots of interest there. And so it didn't surprise me that many people were there. I think it's a reaction to the fact that people are still exploring what open source can do for them.
No, I didn't think that was surprising either, and it was in Denver, hotbed of geospatial. And
now, somewhat counterintuitive to the growth in the intelligence space was what had happened to the companies GeoEye and Digital Globe. Both saw their stock prices declined by almost 50% over the last 12 months. I looked at the stock trends just this morning. They continue to fall off. There was a bump when there were some rumors of takeover for GeoEye, but those rumors have not panned out.
Okay, let me stick with the hardcore geospatial market, and I'll be very honest about this. When we got to the ESRI International User Conference this year in San Diego, and we learned that ESRI was acquiring Procedural, I stared a little bit blankly, because I'm only vaguely familiar with the City Engine product, and I really have to scratch my head. And let me read from the press release. ESRI will integrate City Engine into ArcGIS, allowing ArcGIS users to create and design 3D urban environments leveraging their existing GIS data such as parcels and street centerline. City Engine's rule-driven approach will allow users to undertake large-scale civic planning efforts and will provide immediate visual feedback on the impact of planning decisions such as setbacks and floor-specific zoning changes. Users will also be able to interactively design and analyze urban growth and intuitive sketching tools. Reading that and trying to wrap my brain around this, part of me says, well, of course ESRI has to get into the 3D BIM visualization space if it's going to continue to grow. It also has to go there if it's going to really turn geodesign, which is something like about integrating GIS and planning and design, All good. On the other hand, ESRI has made forays into the 2.5D and the 3D and the sketching with a number of different companies, relationships that overall did not work out. Autodesk, Bentley, Google with SketchUp. I could probably dig out some more. So here we do a straight acquisition and we're going forward. The reason I continue to be surprised is I'm still not 100% convinced that this is all going to work and that ESRI is going to be the leader when it does.
In the 3D sketching modeling type space, is that what you're not sure of?
Well, in the 3D design space, yeah.
Do you think Autodesk and Bentley are there already and why make the move?
Well, there is something to be said for the fact that people who do design still, after all these years, do it in a CAD environment.
Well, all the news I've seen recently out of BIM and modeling has come out of Autodesk and, to a lesser degree, Bentley. In fact, those are where I would have expected the advancements to be made. I think you can argue that that Esri needs to step into this space with the procedural acquisition.
So they have to do something. Yes, absolutely. And this was a thing to do.
Yeah. So I'm not sure it was a surprise. It was a surprise to me that they at the user conference, this was supposed to be a huge announcement, and I had never heard of procedural. my only surprise. So it wasn't a big surprise, but because I never heard of the company.
And I guess maybe what we're reacting to is it should have been a bigger deal, maybe, or I should have felt more of a, oh, wow, this is exactly what ESRI should have done in this space. And maybe I don't know enough about it, or the communications about how GIS and BIM / CAD / design are going to play out aren't clear to me that this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, we'll give them the 6 months leeway here. I'll be at the Geodesign Summit in a couple weeks, so maybe something will shake out of that event.
Fair enough.
Okay, the next one that left me shaking and scratching my head is the continued, pull a number out of the hat of the size of the GIS market. Early in the year, we had Daratech putting out their best estimates early on. The number was in the $4.8 billion range, 7% growth. Later in the year, ARC Advisory came out with a number of $1.7 billion, but focused primarily just on the software market. More than any other number that floats around in our industry, it's always how big is GIS? And, you know, we get this question fairly frequently, and I don't know what number to put any stock in. The only thing that came out of this that you could say, well, okay, they're relatively close, right? They're within the magnitude of what people anticipate, although some orders of magnitude stretch much, much higher. But if you look at the overall size of the companies, either in the data field or the geospatial software field, there are a couple companies that would certainly give you a number of about $2 billion for software sales and about $500 million to $700 million in data sales, and I'm thinking primarily of DigitalGlobe and GOI. Add those numbers up, and you're roughly in the $3 to $4 billion range if you include services and all that, which is where Daratech, I think, has their ultimate number. And yet, it just gives me pause every time I look at one of these estimates and go, really, how do you estimate all of this stuff? So the thing that I guess comes out of this is this really the number? Okay, maybe they're in the ballpark. I still scratch my head. So there you have it.
Well, and I keep coming back to, okay, we get asked this question all the time, and there are absolutely people who need to know this number. Why? Because they're going to do a startup in this space and hope to make a pile of money. Or they have a company in this space and they want to try to help figure out how much it's worth. Right? That's two of the reasons you would want to know this number.
That's right.
Right? And yet, it doesn't seem to matter what the number is. People are still starting up small and large geospatial companies. even ones that we don't even know quite what they're doing are getting acquired, Simple Geo as an example. So it almost doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I see those numbers and I know the pain that you go through to try to tease out what they really mean and are they really viable, part of me just has to say, just throwing out another number. Doesn't really matter. The market is going to just keep plugging along until we can't convince anybody that there is value in what we do. And clearly that is not a problem. We definitely have value.
Right. And I will tell you that I spoke with Dave Simon last week from who's the analyst at IDC, and what he said to me was that that IDC is really having a little bit of trouble selling the reports about the marketplace. It's not as valuable, and perhaps people don't believe the numbers. People don't really care about the trends. And as you said, people still feel that this area of technology is fairly hot, and I think it's true. So we're going to start up the companies, give it a whirl, and see what happens, regardless of that number that people throw out.
Interesting. All right, I'm going to finish up with my last scratching my head event, or non-event, actually, of 2011. I was really disappointed, surprised, frustrated that despite the evolution from iPad 1 to iPad 2 and GPS on one of them and Wi-Fi on the other one of them, I have not seen the great geospatial iPad app. And let me be very clear. I'm making this very broad. Geospatial game, educational tool, professional GIS application for that device, which is just so, the device itself is compelling, but the application from the geospatial direction has not come. And why not? I mean, it's got the accelerator so you can tilt it and turn it, and it's got the big screen, which we said we always wanted. It's got this lovely touch interface that people can't keep their hands off of. It's pretty fast. You could use it over Wi-Fi for a game or something, and yet when you look around at the applications for the iPad, they're the same old, oh, let's put the data on the iPad, let's put the Atlas on the iPad, let's put the matching the Capitals game on the iPad. We haven't broken through to that next level to take full advantage of this platform.
Yeah, not that I don't have an iPad, and I haven't toyed around with anything on the iPad. I every time somebody sits down in front of me with an iPad, I always ask them, "Well, what do you use it for?" And the answers are always not what I expect. It's gaming and maybe some reading and other maybe answering email. I suspect, though, that an application for the GIS market is coming. I really hope somebody is working on it, but I do think that we're young in the tablet days. I expect something to be there.
I think so too, and I don't have an iPad either. And I will be honest. I do want one. I like the idea of it. I can see where I would use it in my play time and my work time. But when I look at some of the really clever, and I was looking at some of the education apps, of which there are many, and some of them are really horrible, but there are some that are just so clever and compelling that even though they're geared to fourth graders, I want to learn about fractions, which with motion math. And the reason that I want to is because you get to tip the iPad and bounce the fractions around so that you show which ones are bigger than others, and it's fully taken advantage of this amazing interface.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I so want that to happen for GIS and for mapping applications, because we've always, I feel like we've been so constrained with our menus and our mouse clicks and our keyboards, and there's so much more we could do getting our hands on the tablet and moving the tablet.
Yeah.
I'm antsy for somebody to show me.
Yeah. Well, I think it will come, and it's funny that you mentioned the iPad as your final note there, because I wanted to end up with saying that I got an iPhone 4S, and I absolutely love this thing. It is a tremendous device. The ingenuity that went into this is just astounding. Of course, whoever dreamed up Siri has got to be a genius, because there was no training of the voice recognition software. It's amazing. I can now sync my iPhone calendar with my calendars on my laptop. I think it's tremendous. And then also, again, a head scratcher, I have to say, from a productivity standpoint, I hate Gmail. I left Gmail this weekend, went back to Microsoft Outlook. I couldn't take it any longer. So I'll wrap up there and say that was my big surprise for the end of the year.
Can you say anything about the iPhone 4S as a geospatial tool?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that I've been downloading some apps that obviously employ location technology. I've got Locoscope on there, which I'm playing with to see not just about the things around me, the places around me, but also for the augmented reality aspect. I haven't gotten there yet. So I will, hopefully, maybe in a future podcast, I'll talk about some of the geo apps. But just initially, some of the weather apps are very, very cool. I love the resolution of the screen. It is very fast with the dual-core processor. Wonderful device.
So you were surprised at how much you like your iPhone?
Absolutely.
And I guess as we wrap up, I will make the statement that I suppose our listeners are now really surprised at what late adopters we are. Neither of us have an iPad. You just got an iPhone. We're slow and steady technology users here at Directions Media. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like you to know that Urban Policy and the Census from ESRI Press helps you understand and use census data for population research, planning, and decision-making. The book offers a methodology to conduct spatial analysis on demographic, economic, housing, and transportation data. For more information, visit www.esripress.com/ESRIPress. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can reach us via Twitter @directionsmag, or you can leave a comment at directionsmag.com, where this podcast is hosted. Thanks for joining us today and all year long. Happy holidays, and be sure to tell a friend.